What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Avalanche Morning Preseason Edition. We are 5 games into a 6-game preseason, and the Avalanche, unfortunately, have dropped their perfect record on the preseason. I'm Bailey Curtis with Grant Foster and Gavin Osegar here with me today. Through the first 4 games, I was feeling pretty good about this team. I don't think I'm feeling bad about them necessarily after game 5. This is the first time you see some sort of real iteration of a full NHL squad for the most part. I guess we'll just kind of dive right into this. You get that full NHL squad, or at least the bigger pieces of it. Most of the side little additions. And you start to see full iterations of the power play, of the penalty kill, of what kind of plays they're running 5-on-5. You see Wedgwood in a full situation. Go ahead and give thoughts. We'll throw it to the collective.
Wedgwood had a great game. Love to see that. Confident in him as the starter. Devon Taves, mm-hmm. great game. Loved his defense. Mm-hmm. Had some good offensive looks as well. Sam Malinsky will be traded by the end of this season. Can tell you that.
2 goals now.
Tough 2 games, honestly.
Yeah.
As much as I like extend the grace because he's playing on his offhand, offside or whatever. He's kind of the odd man out on that decor because you have Brent Burns. You have that right side completely locked up. He's the extra guy, and I could have told you even before these preseason games, like, you're kind of any deal for a defenseman, a left-handed true defenseman that the Avalanche probably will go trade for is always going to have some Malinsky sprinkles on it just to mm-hmm. make it work. And these preseason games have not helped this case, unfortunately.
It's one of those things it's really difficult because I think, especially after last season, I do like Malinsky as a defenseman. I think some of these situations he's running through, if he's on his normal side, I don't think we see nearly as many misplays. I don't think we see him nearly as timid when it comes to his defensive coverage. But in these situations, you can definitely tell he's trying to adjust to some sort of learning curve, even... you begin to wonder what that looks like down the road with a potential Brent Burns on his line or on his pair on his right side and how that affects it moving forward. I'm thinking if we get 20 games into this Avalanche season and it's still like, you know, this really isn't working, that this is something we see fairly early on in the season.
I don't know. I think the D overall, I think if you're letting in 2 goals a game, I think the D and your goalie are doing actually pretty well, all things considered. I mean, Sam Malinsky, especially on the second goal, has a really, really bad turnover. Like, that's a preseason one. You can't be letting those go once the regular season comes rolling around. But I honestly thought D played pretty well, all things considered. Malinsky's he's out of his element right now. He just needs to kind of get accustomed to it. Burns was good. I don't fully understand why he's quarterbacking the power play when Taser makes the better option there. I don't really get that. I get Burns is active and mobile, but I mean, man, Taves just works so much better with that system. And also, like, I'd like to see Landeskog on the top unit for the power play. But that's power play. We can talk about that if we want to. That's but
tangent, yeah.
But it's just interesting. This team is still, like, this was their first kind of real game as an NHL lineup, which you don't really see all that often. You kind of let that happen in the first couple games of the season. But there's just so many miscues. I think McKinnon's not fully there. Nate just definitely isn't fully there. Landeskog looked fine. Nelson still looks a little bit out of it. Nelson's a weird one that for me to kind of like evaluate, because he kind of looks like he's there, but he also kind of looks lost too. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think I thought Nate just had a decent game. I didn't think McKinnon had a good game at all. I'm not worried about it. I just think that he kind of anchored whatever line he was on. I'm not worried about that at all. I just think it is what it's going to be. Landeskog, great night. Lone goal scorer for the Avalanche. Great to see him get a pretty amazing shot off. That was pretty fun. I know. At first, wow. I thought it was accidental, and I was like, actually, no, Landeskog is a pretty great player. So that's always really fun to see.
Landeskog can work in space. Color me shocked.
Yeah. I liked, I didn't mind Nelson's game. I wouldn't write home about it. I couldn't tell you anything like super positive. I just thought he was responsible. I thought he was solid. Overall, kind of like a whatever for the top six. I thought Nichushkin actually had a bit of a decent showing. Does have the assist on that Landeskog goal. Mm-hmm. Almost had a goal himself. He beat the goalie, mm-hmm. just didn't beat the iron. It's just kind of unfortunate for that. But, yeah, really, the only kind of real guy I noticed, well, that's kind of more getting into the third line if you guys wanted to talk more a little bit about the top six at all.
Let's do it.
I the only thing I had to say was, and then we'll throw it back to you for the third line, is like, Lekkonen kind of seems out of his element a little bit at times. And he definitely was last season, just because playing with Natchez and McKinnon and those two running around is difficult. But I found him a lot of times kind of being like a beer league center, just planting his ass in front of the net. Sorry, there goes the explicit warning, the explicit rating. But yeah,
5 minute mark. We're
good. Yeah. But, you know, Lekkonen was all like, every time I looked at Lekkonen, especially the top unit, he was right in front of the goal, which honestly is good because it leaves room for Natchez and McKinnon to create space and make their playmaking abilities. But I would almost like to see something more out of Lekkonen there. I don't know. I still think the Chushkin's the guy for the top line. I think Lekkonen. I think there's going to be an uncomfortable situation where maybe, because I don't think Victor Olofsson looked all that great in the third line. Gavin, we'll let you get into it. But I don't know. It's going to be weird because both Olofsson and Lekkonen kind of play a similar type of game. But Olofsson's bigger.
I think we definitely will see Olofsson get moved a lot. I think he's going to be kind of fluid in that top nine for a lot of his game, just because he is that shooter. I didn't really notice his game outside of the first period, but I think he had some showings where I liked his game in the first period. I didn't notice any huge defensive breakdowns. I basically, the story of this whole game is like, I didn't really notice a lot of people after the first period. Other than that, I would say probably Barnikov had some good showings. I'm glad
that's who I was going to mention. I feel like he had his moments, but
I think so too. I don't know what happened with the 2-on-1 with Nichushkin. I thought he kept the speed very well, which is something you don't see very much with KHL players, which I'm mm-hmm. glad he's like keeping up the pace with the NHL. But I don't know what I didn't notice a bad pass from Nichushkin, but he just completely fumbled that 2-on-1. So that was a little unfortunate to see. Other than that, I liked his game. I thought he was good and physical. I'm glad he's not injured. I'm glad he came back to the game and was all right. Gavin Brindley, I noticed popping a lot during this game. I noticed him definitely popping off the screen several times. Kind of the first game where I have to say, like, it was definitely the game where I'm like, I notice all the skill and like why he's been so good, but the one where I'm like, this is a guy who should start in the AHL. And yes. It's not quite there yet. He's somewhere in between, like, should be good AHL player, not quite ready for NHL. I'd really like to see him have a full season in Loveland, playing in the actual top six, definitely going to be on the first power play unit. So getting good time up there where he needs it rather than just kind of float around the Avalanche and not really play. But yeah, what do you guys think? I think we got everyone off. I thought Drury was fine. He was great on faceoffs. Decent. Yeah.
I honestly think with Barticov and Brindley that I'm still a big question mark on Barticov. I'm not sure how he's really gonna do. The problem with Brindley is he's just got so much competition at wing. If he was a center, he'd have a better shot, honestly. But what is he, like 5'10"?
5'9".
He's 5'9". Yeah, whatever.
5'9".
Yeah, he's
plays. He almost plays like he's 6 foot though, yeah. Which is crazy to watch.
That would not be a great center.
Victor Olofsson exists in this lineup right now.
Yeah,
If
Victor Olofsson if they did not sign him, Gavin Brindley would have a solid shot at a lineup spot day in, day out. But fortunately for us, we have Victor Olofsson. So
I think
Bednar. I think Olofsson is a big reason of how Bednar needs to adapt his play style a little bit. Because Olofsson, especially with the Sabres and then the Vegas Golden Knights, those teams are very big on kind of not dumping in the corners, but they're very big on not using the rush as their main tool of gaining the zone. They mostly gain the zone, like Sabres and Vegas Golden Knights, less so the Sabres because they're kind of a dumpster fire. But the Vegas Golden Knights are more precedented on like a controlled entry, while the Avalanche want to use speed and overwhelm you and like keep finding the guy that keeps filling the lane. And I don't think that's very good for Victor Olofsson style. And I would actually like to see Bednar actually like, I don't think he should change everything fully, but I do think there should be like an option maybe to use Victor Olofsson to his brighter points because he is a good goal scorer. That's what we've needed in the bottom six, really. We need.
I thought he was good against the boards today, too. I saw that from him today, which I was pleasantly surprised with.
He's great with boards. I just don't think Victor Olofsson is not the guy who's going to be like keeping up with Logan O'Connor and like Ross Colton when they're flying the zone. Like that's not his game. His game is much more, you know, we're gonna have a nice slow entry. We're going to have people set up. We're going to have people going around the boards. We're going to have people, you know, going in front of the net, kind of like a Lecky kind of situation. I would like to see Bednar do something more with where he puts him. Cause I don't think he's bringing out the best in Olofsson. Now, granted, it's preseason. Everybody's still trying to get their feet under them, but you know, like everybody, like we've been saying, like we said in the last two podcasts, you got to start out hot. If you start out hot, you can kind of, you know, like because March is going to be late February, early March is going to be kind of a dog day for McKinnon, Makar, and Taze, Landeskog, maybe Lecky. And so you really need to get out on the forefront early. I don't know.
I will say kind of gearing the conversation back to Barticov and Brindley. I think this kind of game is what I expected to see from both of them in the preseason. Going into this, I expected to see guys who are kind of playing catch up a little bit around an NHL squad. And I've been waiting to see them implemented into a game like this. And this is the first game where I've been like, no, this is what I've expected to see out of a Gavin Brindley, who still shows a lot of that tenacity, still shows that he's a gritty guy who can play people off the puck and can showcase speed in times of need. And but it is a guy who I think is still struggling against a squad that has that NHL talent and that NHL experience. And I do agree with you, Gavin, in saying I think there's maybe another year for him in the AHL. This is a guy who could earn a call-up. I think he's absolutely proven that there's a conversation to be had about call-ups during the season should the need arise for it. But this is a guy who could marinate in a league like the AHL for a little bit, and he's in good hands with Lettice too, so I don't think there's any problem there. When it comes to Barticov, I thought he looked a little lost during that first period. in situations. I think there were times where, as the period went on, he started to look a little bit more comfortable, kind of started to get into his element a little bit more. But there were situations where I was like, this looks like a KHLer adjusting to NHL hockey. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing when you're trying to help somebody adjust to a new system, finding a role for them, and then playing them the way that they need to be played in that role. I think this is a guy who's still learning, a guy who is still trying to figure out the ins and outs and how the leagues are different and what's expected of him, which, again, is not a bad thing in my mind.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of a – it's just a learning period for a guy like Barty-Koff. You're going to see the really great games, and then you're going to see these ones where it's kind of like you liked a lot of what he showed, but you want to tweak some other things as well as time goes on, and I think that's going to be good for him. Yeah, really, it's just you've got, let's see, one more game left on preseason?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, thank God. you just want to see what he does against Dallas on game six. Really, I'm kind of overall not taking too much away from the game. I think that the best thing we ever avoided was going perfect on the preseason, which the 16-17 team did. And you know how that season turned out. So don't ever go perfect on the preseason. It doesn't matter. yeah. So that fate is avoided. So we're good with that. That was the most important part.
I do want to shift the conversation a little bit, gearing away from individual player reports and kind of going into the team as a whole. And looking at something I mentioned when we were introducing the episode, that we got the first real look at the power play and the penalty kill today and what that will look like with an NHL rounded unit. And overall, I'm not mad, but I do have questions, I guess, if that makes sense. Or at least I'm trying not to sound the sirens just yet.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm trying not to sound the sirens yet, because I do understand that it is preseason and there's still, you know, a mindset to kind of get into once opening night hits and you start to see that in a little bit of a different light and it starts to matter, I think, a little bit more. But at the same time, I've been incredibly impressed with the penalty kill. In all five games that the Avalanche have played so far in the preseason, I have been nothing but impressed with how the penalty kills performed. The power play has been hard to watch up until this game, I think. And I'll kind of throw it over to you there.
Yeah, I think based off of the power play, I know that what it seems to be the philosophy and what I was most interested in looking at was how they're playing MacKinnon specifically and what the new power play look is, which is trying to do a lot behind the goal line. That is what Dallas does a lot. That's what a lot of teams are starting to transition to, because it is just hell for the goalie that is playing on the side that's trying to get scored on. So the worst part about it, too, is the goalie obviously can't see what's behind them. Their own, like, penalty killers are facing their own net, which is incredibly difficult to deal with. It also allows the power play quarterback to then streak in. Do we know someone like that here on the Colorado Avalanche? So there's a lot of benefits to playing that way, and a lot of teams are figuring out that that's a very new power play to roll out. And to no surprise, that's what Dave Haxtell is trying with the Avalanche. They put Martin Necas in MacKinnon's old spot. They'll also just switch and have Martin Necas play behind the goal line as well, which is interesting. I really like how it looked on that first power play. There were two, I believe, in this game. They did go 0-for-2. But that first power play, I love their puck movement. I think that they were handling it really well. I liked Nelson on that spot, on that the right side in Rantanen's old spot. I liked, obviously, Cale Makar was looking great as always. I really liked almost every player's puck movement. The one problem is they just didn't shoot the puck. And there were several times where it's like with Brock Nelson, it's like, dude, you have a good deceptive shot that you can just wrist and force past the goalie. And he doesn't. When he's got a good chance, he tries another cross-ice pass to Netjes, who gets it, but is like, oh, damn, it's another pass, and can't shoot. So it's more of that, where it's just you have to just drill into them that they need to shoot the puck. The one guy I left out talking about was Artturi Lehkonen, who should not be on the power play. His highlights were getting out-muscled in front of the net. And I love him. I think that he has a good stick, and he definitely can tip pucks. It's just you have Val Nichushkin sitting right there. You have not Brock Nelson. You have Gabe Landeskog. And you have better options to do what Lehkonen does and who have done it better throughout their entire careers. But it's this love of Lehkonen just to put him in the same spot that needs to stop. It didn't work with you in the playoffs. It got the other moron fired. So at what point are you just going to stop putting Artturi Lehkonen in a spot where he can't succeed? That's kind of the one problem I have with it. And they didn't shoot. But I liked how MacKinnon looked below the goal line. I think when he did crash the net, and you saw it again during the 6-on-5 with the what's his name? The goalie. When they pulled the goalie, they also tried basically kind of the same setup. And MacKinnon crashed the net, had a great chance, and Landeskog almost tied it. So I like that below the goal line look. I think it looks really nice. I think it really looked good with guys like Gabe Landeskog right there, a guy who's actually a good net front presence. And take the hints from that what you will.
I actually have two problems with like the power play, less so the extra man when the goalie's pulled. I think Brock Nelson's fine there when the goalie's pulled. But I think we need someone who wants to finish the puck on the other side of the bumper. That's why I think Landeskog would work better there, or Nichushkin, just because those guys do score. Like, they're less playmakers. They do want to score goals. And just like the extra pass isn't needed there for Brock Nelson. And that's the same complacency that gets the Avalanche in trouble so many times. And it's just infuriating. I actually think Brock Nelson would actually be better in the bumper, just because, I mean, if you have him in the bumper and you have, you know, that's a bigger guy for the screen, because, you know, Lecky's going to be the net front presence anyways. And I also think it gives you a really good option where if you're doing this whole power play design where you have Nathan MacKinnon below the goal line, or you're going to rotate Netjes there, or Netjes, or Netjes, whatever the hell you want to call him these days. If you're having them rotate, I think a guy like Brock Nelson, who's a little more agile and a little bit better at finding softer spots, well, that might be harsh on Artur. That might be harsh on Lecky. But I think Brock Nelson's a little bit better suited for the middle. Maybe put Landeskog or Nichushkin. You really have one more preseason game to test something out on the bumper before you kind of head into the season. And I'd like to see a change there. I don't think Nelson's very comfortable on the bumper. If anything, when he was traded last year and Bailey and I went to practice, he looked a lot more familiar with being in the middle of the ice. So,
oh, he is. And yeah, just for like reference, he's been that for years as a player. Like, that's what he's been doing on the New York Islanders power play, and he's excelled at it. He's been one of the best at the league. So it is something I'd like to see happen as well. But on that right side, I just don't really know, other than Victor Olofsson, who would really take his spot. And that's kind of the.
I think it's not a bad thing within reason to have the ability to see something not working and be adaptable, because I think that's one of the pitfalls that Bednar finds himself in. And I think that's one of his biggest criticisms, is that there's a plan A and a plan A.5. And then it's like, there's nothing else. Like, it's like, you know, and yes, it's great when you have a plan A that's working, and even a plan A.5 that's working. But you know, you're getting yourself into trouble here, and teams are finding this out.
I think it's also important to give Lecky credit where credit is due, because he's become really, really well known for his grit in the Ozone too, scoring those kind of greasy goals. And I think that's the mindset that they're going into with putting him in that position on the power play and trying to potentially get that out of him. What they don't realize is a lot of that comes out of his ability to be dynamic in certain areas. And that's not really what they're looking for from him specifically on the power play. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that's kind of important to point out when you're looking for guys who fill specific roles. That isn't what Lecky is used to doing, more or less, or more or less built to do. And I think that's something I'm hoping they're identifying as they look back at film on this game, as they're going through these different roles on special teams units with different players, and just kind of realizing, hey, if we're going to utilize Lecky on the power play, this is where he needs to not be, if we use him at all, because there are much better players suited for the different ways that this power play is being utilized.
I do want to I want to also credit the penalty kill, though. That is something that I think they're perfect, right? They haven't been scored on the power play at all. Yeah, no. And that's something you really love to see. I think with several of the personnel not even being in, it's just they have that system so dialed that you get guys like Barnikov on the penalty kill. Brent Burns is also an aspect I'd love to see on the penalty kill. They haven't been able to use him as much, just not being in games versus either being in the box for some of the penalties. But
I loved Brindley and Drury.
Yeah, Drury is looking great. I think he's the perfect guy to have there. I think I would love, again, like Burns, just to go back to that. I think the biggest contribution Brent Burns has is not having Cale Makar on the power play or on the penalty kill. Which he should not be, like, at all. Like, it's just, I think Brent Burns is not only a better penalty killer.
And that's no slouch, I think, against Cale Makar.
No, I just
either.
I just don't. I would like him to play less minutes. I think that when you get to, you have several years now where it's like you have the Seattle Kraken series and you have the this recent Dallas series where Cale Makar enters it, and after having to carry a lot of the load throughout the season, he's kind of gassed and isn't playing like his best. I think taking him off the penalty kill, and you see with Quinn Hughes, you see with a lot of the big power, the power play quarterback, like number one defenseman, don't play the penalty kill for a reason. It's because it just overextends them. So I really hope that Brent Burns, like, that's the biggest addition, is take Makar off the penalty kill. But other than that,
Well, Brent Burns knows how to play the penalty kill, because he came to us from the, you know, completely defensive, no offensive-minded Carolina Hurricanes.
We're really going to start making this into a challenge.
It's getting
28 minutes and 14 seconds, by the way.
There's a new drinking game, people. There's a new drinking game for people who listen. How many times you bring up the Hurricanes? How many times we say Girard sucks? And how many times we say Bednar or McFarland should be fired?
Well, we can't say that too much. It gets stale. But
no, it's a new drinking game. No, yeah, you'll get fucked up each episode.
Yeah, but speaking of Sam Girard,
I do want to get into that and looking at, you know, injuries and things of that sort. Mackenzie Blackwood, it sounds like rehabilitation's going well, and the expectation is for him to be ready within the first week or two of the regular season, which is not new news. Just kind of reiterating and reaffirming what we've already learned. But based on comments from Jared Bednar following practice this past week, it sounds like Girard could have an opportunity to play in Saturday's game with the way that he is progressing, which, good news, bad news, however you want to take it. I think for a guy who's slated to be in the starting lineup every night, that's something you want, is for him to get at least one game during the preseason before throwing him in cold turkey into opening night. if that's still the target for him, which it sounds like it is. Grant, I'll throw it over to you with Gerard potentially playing on Saturday. Is that the expectation for him to kind of fall back into the role that Bednar expects out of him?
Yes. Next question. Yes. Let's keep the Gerard talk to a minimum, eh?
Oh God, Gavin, anything to add
here? You know, he doesn't hate to lose that Frenchman. He doesn't hate to lose.
All right,
French Canadian.
I thought it was really funny when, like, during practice, everyone was talking about like how Gerard was skating and looked noticeably in pain, had to be helped off the ice by one of the trainers, and then like you get the same day like the update of like, yeah, Sam Gerard should probably be ready by like for a preseason game. So I was like, did you ask Sam Gerard about that? Does he know that? willing him to play. Like, I don't know what was happening there, but no. And then it seemingly he's fine and he's practicing the next day. So I think with Sam Gerard, the biggest problems you have with him is this, that he's been unclutch, like in general, of driving play, contributing to like being the real guy to start play, either being the puck moving defenseman that creates things and really helps start like depth in the playoffs, whether it's any type of secondary depth whatsoever. And the thing that I can extend and say, like, we might have a different year for Gerard is obviously you have more depth than you did before. He's coming into a situation where there's like a real top nine forward core. So with a guy who like obviously is not the main guy starting plays or driving it, at least he can help it. He very good puck moving defenseman. That's what he excels at. Good skater. So, and you know that the Avalanche team is starving for left-handed defensemen. So for that reason, I think I want to see like what he can do. If you're talking about another sub 25 point season for Sam Gerard, that's not good enough, especially for a lineup that's respectably healthy. You are looking at Gerard having a bit of a bounce back year, and you're looking at him at least to be a contributor instead of just kind of a guy. That's really what you're looking at, especially having such an important role as like the only left-handed defenseman behind Devontaeus.
I don't know if Gerard's ever going to eclipse 35 points again or this season, purely because I think Brent Burns is taking over for him on the second power play. I think he got a few points on the power play because there's always the Taves absolute clapper from the point, which is another reason why Taves should be quarterbacking it. But I don't know. I watched the game tonight and I kind of saw the prospect that we have. Bailey, what's his name again? I can't get his name.
Oh, Jack O'Shawn.
Jack O'Shawn. And I kind of looked at that guy. And as I saw him skating around, I said, is Sam Gerard playing? Because he kind of played like Sam Gerard, just without the L tornadoes.
You know, and with a harder shot.
Yeah, left stick, L1 plus right stick to the left for all you FIFA players. But like, I'm not sure if like, I just don't know. I mean, if there's another guy who can do that. I mean, he looked pretty good. Not saying he's NHL caliber. Not saying he's NHL ready. Not saying any of that.
He's a guy who excels in the AHL. He is a Gavin Brindley type who is extremely experienced at his level of hockey, which is the AHL.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking about, especially with all the recent news of cap, and it's always going to be held against him because he is one of the higher paid defensemen he's the third highest paid defenseman on this team. And the fact that you got beat by Josh Manson. And I think he got beaten point by points with Josh Manson. Can someone double check me on that? Did he? Hold on.
I don't know.
But Bailey, what do you think while I'm looking this up?
No, I think you guys kind of hit the nail on the head with that. I'm in a situation like Saturday, if he plays, I'm not expecting to see Gerard at the top of his prime. This is solely a game where you're looking to kind of see where he's at, to see where his injury stands and if he's playing a fully healthy 100% game, which I'm not sure anybody who's not an NHL lock should be. Because again, it is preseason, and as much as you want to win every single game, there's also something to be said about not putting yourself at risk. At the same time, I think there's something to be said about Sam Girard pushing himself a little bit when it comes to a game like Saturday, just to kind of see where he's at, because I think there is a lot to prove from him this season. And heading into an opening night situation, this is a guy who, for me specifically, I've kind of got under a microscope. And you're looking at wanting to get the best version of Samuel Girard possible. And we got nowhere near that last season. I think there's a lot more that Girard is capable of as a player. As you mentioned, Gavin being a good puck moving defenseman, I'd like to see him contribute a little bit more. If he's not driving plays, at least getting involved, I think is really, really important for him and the way that he plays specifically. But yeah, that's just kind of my two cents.
Yeah, I think that's, I want to see more from him as the story of his entire career. moving on to I agree with that assessment. I think you're looking for this year to be like, show us what do you have left. But yeah, I think talking about, like, especially with cap going up and new deals being made, a guy making $5 million, I'm sure it's been talked to death, is no small thing. Speaking of deals just getting made,
I want to bring it back. All right. So Manson wasn't as close to Girard in points as I thought. However, I like Sam Bolinski was. Yeah. So that's a little concerning. But Girard was at 24. Bolinski was at 15. But considering Bolinski at times only had like 13 minutes of ice time, hard to kind of like say that, you know, he was really getting on the score sheet. I mean, he had 5 less minutes of ice time. That's kind of crazy to me. But yeah. You know, like Gavin said, is it 5 or 6? I thought it was 6. Is it 6 or 5?
For his contract? Samuel
Girard.
5.
You were the one that just had it pulled up.
It's 5? Yeah, it is 5. I don't know. It, like, especially with being, this sounds really stupid, but he's 27. He's 5'10" and a puck moving defenseman. Defensemen don't really last that long when they're that small, just because once their speed starts slowing down, it's really hard to like find your place in a lineup. That's why people like Eric Brandstrom, Oliver Shillington, they don't stay around all that often. It's because it's hard. It's incredibly difficult to be a puck moving defenseman at that height. That's why I think Lane Hutson was good right now, but will he be good in 10 years? I don't think so. But he's not the only left-handed defenseman who people are talking about recently.
I don't know. Before we get into our final topic of the podcast, I do want to throw it over to our sponsors in DraftKings and give them, or be able to shout them out a little bit. Going to throw it over to our sponsored ad read.
NFL fans, what's your favorite touchdown? For me, it's the next one, because with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner in the NFL, every touchdown could bring you closer to cashing in. From first touchdown score to anytime touchdown props or the thrill of live in-game betting, every snap is loaded with opportunity. Just like your Denver Broncos with going against the Philadelphia Eagles in Game 5. It's been a little bit rough for the Denver Broncos, but with the money line of plus 164 to beat the Philadelphia Eagles, it's looking pretty good for your wallet. Or bet on Jalen Hurts to have +2 touchdowns for plus 197 betting odds, or bet on Bo Nix to also throw 240 plus pass yards for plus 149. Here's the best part. Bet just $5, and if your bet wins, you'll get $200 in bonus bets instantly. When I'm looking to bet, DraftKings is my first place to go. Your team hitting pay dirt pays out to you. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code THPN. That's code THPN to turn $5 into $200 in bonus bets if your bet wins. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, fees may apply in Illinois. 21 plus age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bet must win to receive reward. Minimum minus $500 required. Bonus bets expire 7 days after issuance. For additional terms and responsible gambling resources, see dkng.co/audio.
And with the final topic among us, I want to throw it over to some big news that happened over the last week that has been pretty much the topic of conversation in almost all NHL circles, but moving away from who it pertains to most, which is one Mr. Connor McDavid. Let's just kind of rip the Band-Aid off here. Kirill Kaprizov making history with the highest AAV, or I guess not even AAV, you're looking at a contract as a whole. This is the most money any player has gotten paid. You're looking at $17 million AAV over 8 years. First off, holy cow. Good gracious, that is a lot of money. But you look at a deal like this, and first off, want to get your opinions on the deal as it pertains to a player in the Central, somebody the Avs are going to be seeing a lot of over the next 8 years, and just kind of start there.
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota's got to do it. I mean, it is mm-hmm. the best player that they've had in their mid-franchise for their entire history. So it's without Kirill Kaprizov, the Minnesota Wild just become who they've always been for years. So they
the Minnesota Mild,
the mid, I don't know, whatever you want to come with it. It makes complete sense. I mean, they have a bit of good prospects on their way. They have like Pride of DU, Zeev Boyum. Like they have a good amount of prospects coming up. You just really got to hope they hit. And with Kirill Kaprizov, like a guy like that, you just can't let him go. I think when it comes to what it looks like for the NHL, I really don't think it'll affect too much. You do see like those outlier type guys making that amount of money. It makes you appreciate Nathan MacKinnon's contract a lot mm-hmm. more right now. It also just kind of, like, I think the market will come back down to earth. Obviously, like, I would hate to be signing deals now, but I think as time goes on, I think when it comes to a guy like Necas, the dream of having him below $10 million is kind of dead. Mm-hmm. I think that with it right now, you'd be happy anywhere from about $10 to $11 million. $11 million would probably feel like $500,000 too much. But honestly, I could live with it. I think with a guy like that, though, like you're looking at him and you're saying you've got to be having 90 points pushing for 100. I think that based off of his career trajectory, he's definitely been trending on the up. So I'm excited to see what he can do. It's just right now, obviously, everyone has the contract talks, and I think you look at like a Rantanen situation and what happened there. And you think like, OK, so you pay that guy what he wanted, whatever he like let pencil in $14 million and then Makar's contract comes up in 2 years and you're just unable to compete. So it's money's tough in the NHL. And mm-hmm. you look at Cale Makar's contract now compared to a guy like Luke Hughes and you're like, huh, contracts are kind of weird right now.
I agree. I think the interesting thing about the Wild is this isn't the first time they've handed a massive contract to one of their players like Ryan Suter or Zach Parise, which is interesting. They've done this 3 times now, which is
the definition awkward. Of insanity.
Yeah, which is kind of awkward. However, I'm not of the same opinion as Gavin here. I think if you're Natchez and you're asking for 10 or 10 and a half, I think you really have to be kind. You're especially with the cap going up and exponentially every player wanting more, a bigger piece of the pie because, you know, everybody wants to make more money when there's more money available. But you have to kind of separate yourself at this point. You can't be the guy who just had one good season because you were in a you got traded midway through. You really have to establish yourself as like you don't have to be in it in the actual top 25 players in the NHL, but you have to be in the conversation. And he's not in the conversation right now. To a lot of people, there's a lot of good players in the NHL. And the fact that he's not in that conversation and he wants 10 and a half, I don't personally like that at all. I think he's lucky to get 10. If he wants more money, he can go play for the bottom feeder Blackhawks. Like, I don't really care. But I mean,
coming from somebody who's never been high on Martin Natchez. So
I've never been high on Martin Natchez. But I also have to think logically here and thinking, you know, why are we giving 11 if he does, if it is 11, why are we giving 11 to a guy who we don't have experience with when we could have just given 12 to the guy before?
Well, that wasn't the deal for the Avalanche.
I know. Yeah. But here's the point right now. But here's the fundamental point. That Mikko Rantanen contract with the Stars looks amazing right now when you see Kaprizov. And then whenever you see McDavid sign for that deal looks amazing because they got a steal. I don't understand this idea of, well, we got Jack Drury too, because he's also up for contract. Kale McCarr is also up for contract in a couple years. You have to give him everything. That's like the most valuable player in the NHL right now, because McDavid is the best player in the NHL, but McDavid's getting older. You know, Kale McCarr is still like, I think Kale McCarr is still what, 26? Is yeah. he? He's 27.
He turns 27. He turns 27. Yeah.
But like, you know, that's the most valuable guy in the league. I mean, Connor McDavid is almost 30. So like, you know, when teams give him a big contract, he's not getting 8 years or 7 years. He'll probably get six, maybe five, and the number will be higher. But you know, I don't see Natchez being put at 11 when you have to re-sign everybody you've brought in, because after this season, if you re-sign Natchez, how much money is left for Jack Drury? How much money is left to replace Brent Burns if you don't get him for another season, and he's already 41? I just don't see the logic here in from a managerial standpoint of, we're going to give you $11 million because you prove to be good in one season. I don't get that.
I want to reiterate something before moving on to my thoughts with Natchez. I think the Avalanche would have loved to have signed Mikko Rantanen to a $12 million deal. The thing that a lot of... 12 and a half
looks good.
No, that's what I'm saying, is it took two teams telling him no to $14 million for him to be able to take 12. Three teams.
Yeah.
To say no to $14 million for him to finally move down on his number.
Traded
but
twice
I don't, season. I don't think yeah. that was ever I don't think that was ever the issue with Rantanen. I don't think he ever thought he was gonna get $14 million as a member of the Colorado Avalanche. I think he did want 12.7 or 13, and that looks a lot better than the Kaprizov deal. I mean, well, I'm saying this in retrospect.
But the biggest problem that we know is that his agency was playing hardball, and the conversation was Mikko Rantanen wanted to be an Av. The problem was him and his agency weren't also in a conversation at all. I think
according to rumors, he was offered 12 and a half to 12.7, and he still said no.
So it's just And we and the biggest thing that blew it up was the Draisaitl deal that's very well documented that they have the same agency. So I think it was definitely a fumbling by his representation because he was kind of shocked at it. He was like, I thought we were going to talk for longer. And it's like, well, dude, if like the thing with Netjes, though, is that he's been the biggest difference is that he's been a lot better with the conversation and keeping the communication open. Same thing with Landeskog. He literally went to like the last day of free agency, could have gotten $1 million more and just ultimately decided he wanted to be here. And it's, it's something I think that's going to happen with Makar too. Like, I think it's, I don't think Makar is taking 17 million. I think Makar is taking somewhere around 15, measly amount of money. Who cares? But
I don't know.
I really don't see him doing that to the organization. I think that the Avalanche by then with the cap going up wouldn't have a problem. I just don't see contracts exploding like that. I really think that this is an outlier like John Tavares all those years ago when he signed his big contract in Toronto. I just think that it's not really going to matter as much, but unfortunately that Netjes and Rantanen are always going to get compared, even though that their situations are completely different. I think that with the cap exploding, I would prefer 10.5 million for Netjes. I think that based off of how it's going and with how what seems to be the philosophy with both him and his agency and the Avalanche is go out there and prove it. Like play like you want to be paid $11 million and we'll pay you $11 million. It just comes to the point where like, but if you fall short and you have like a less successful version of Rantanen where like he goes quiet but doesn't have the superpower of getting points anyway, then you can come back to earth and say like, oh, that's funny, $11 million, give me a real offer. I think that that's kind of just the best way that the Avalanche management is playing it is show me you're worth the money or we'll see that you're not worth the money.
I think that's a bad way to – I think that's a bad perspective though, and not just saying that because, you know – It's not like I don't want him to do well. I want the Avalanche to do well. As much as I knock on Natchez, I want him to do well. But I think the problem, that I keep having with this whole thing, where if he wants this kind of, if he wants big bucks, and I'm not talking big bucks like an $8 million deal or a $9 million deal, like the Luke Hughes deal. I'm talking about like, you know, I'm talking about $10 million plus. And when I think about that, and I think about, you know, $11 million kind of being that. That number for him, if that is the quote unquote number, you know, you have Jack Drury to re-sign, you have Victor Olofsson to re-sign or find a replacement for, you have Joel Kiviranta that you either have to re-sign or find a replacement for, you have to pay more for Sam Walensky because, you know, because Parker Kelly would never make 1.7 in the salary cap that we have right now. You have to re-sign. You have to find someone to fill Brent Burns' spot. And then you also have to find someone to fill Scott Wedgwood's spot. There's so many things with the cap going up. Yes, players are able to get more and you have more money to spend, but it almost causes an inverse effect where if you start giving out more money to players like Natchez, you're almost screwing yourself more out of key depth guys like Kiviranta or Victor Olofsson or Brent Burns and Sam Walensky, because the Sam Walensky 1.4 contract is going to look a lot more like 3.5. The Victor Olofsson deal, if you want to bring him back, that instead of 1.5, it's going to look more like 2.7. And the Jack Drury contract is not going to be 1.7. If he's going to be your third line center, you're going to pay him $5 million. And I think all these numbers are adding.
You're talking about overpaying, I see what you mean.
Yeah, because, you know, you start falling into pitfall where everybody wants more of what's offered to them. And it's hard as a general manager to kind of, especially with someone who's kind of a pushover like Chris McFarlane a little bit, that, you know, you have all this money allocated so everywhere that, you know, you're eventually just, your fourth line is going to be exactly what it was. I mean, the fact that we have Brock Nelson making 7.5 and we have Landeskog making 7 is pretty bad. You know,
I mean, deals that the Landeskog was a deal signed by Joe Sakic, though.
I like that contract. I'm just saying, with how the salary cap's going up and players evidently getting more, like Kaprizov, every player is looking at that deal saying, I can get a little bit more than I think I'm worth. Because if he's getting this, I can retrospectively look at myself and what I value to a team and adjust it to this price here. You know?
Yeah, I just don't think that the Avs are in a rush to re-sign a lot of those guys. I think Brent Burns obviously making the commitment to take a $1 million deal and then defer money with the bonuses to next year is pretty evident that he doesn't really care about the money. That was a good pickup. I like that. Victor Olofsson, I think he's getting paid regardless unless he has a disastrous season. If he plays well, he's going to price himself out of Colorado. And that's kind of the reason why they got Gavin Brindley to kind of be that right wing. And then you have Colton for another year. So that's theoretically your third line next season. So you have like, what do you call it? You have backups. You have initiatives to take control of a lot of the problems in your lineup. With Jack Jury, I'm not too worried about him. He's a restricted free agent. So he's theoretically, I think that was a big draw as to why the Avalanche got him. And I think if you see the Avalanche have a lot of leverage because of that, and if you see him playing well, I think you'll see that deal come through like right in the middle of the season. And then if he doesn't play well, you kind of look and you say, like, is a 4C, the elite 4C making above $1.7 million because he'll have to get repaid, really a luxury we can afford? So that's kind of how the lineup is going to kind of fix itself as time goes on. But I'm not really worried about the money contracts. I don't think that this Kaprizov deal will have too much of an impact on NHL salaries. I think that more so the next 2 years, like by the time we get to 2027, 2028 season, I think that then you're going to start to see contracts really explode, but that won't have anything to do with Kaprizov. I think that'll more have to do with the salary cap rising.
That's true. I guess I look at Jack Drury more so than Natchez. Being essentially their kind of prospects not the right word, but almost bridge guy for when Brock Nelson gets to the ages that like gets to a point where he's not the second line center, and they kind of look to Jack Drury to kind of fill that role. That's why I placed him at $5 million because I think like, you know, there's this season that he's got the no trade clause. Then the next season's got a no trade clause. And then 27-28, when he's about 36, he does have a modified no trade clause. And I feel like they almost kind of want to line up this deal to essentially have like Jack Drury kind of take over that spot from Brock Nelson. That's the only reason I put a number out that high. But, you know, we'll have time. We'll have time. We'll tell. I will say, and just making sure I don't sound like too much of an idiot, I did see projected cap space, and I do see $26 million going into the offseason, which is nice. That's very helpful.
The Avs will get a lot of cap space, so that's I'm not too really worried about them.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I looked at the Dallas Stars cap space, and that is tall. They have a lot of stuff to sign, yeah.
I also look at this projected cap space and I go, okay, well, it's at $27 million. You have a Nature's coming off of that's $11 million. That's leaves you with $16 million to fill out 5 roster spots. And that's that can get a little dicey. So,
yeah, I think that's why I look at a guy like Gavin Brindley, and I know that the Avs like Lucas Reichel as well, who also seems to be on the trade block. And I see like those precious ELC deals that you can then turn into cheaper contracts and really kind of kick the can down the road for the next 4 years with those kind of deals. Guys like Gavin Brindley with that. You look at those like versatile, hopefully middle six guys in Brindley's case. And then obviously there's a lot of caveats to that Lucas Reichel thing, including the Avs actually trade for him. But you would see like the biggest things is like get guys on ELCs. That's probably the most cheap thing, because the best way to get contract value in the NHL is to underpay guys. And that's, you're hoping, like, you love the first years of their deal because they're on really cheap contracts. You love the second deal they get because they're not quite making what they should be allowed to. Thank McKinnon on that $6 million deal, or Makar right now on his $9 million deal. And then it's really that third contract, that like 8-year monster deal, Kaprizov, McKinnon making 12.6, Makar making all the money in the world, blank check.
yeah, thank you. Yeah,
that, those are the ones that are like, damn, he's making what he deserves, but that really sucks for the team.
Just sign, please. You know, I will say Makar for $9 million and then seeing Luke Hughes sign for $9 million is kind of hilarious. I like that, you know, people all over social media are just memeing it because that is such an overpay. Apparently they have -$4 million in cap space. So I don't know how the hell that happened.
And that's why I kind of wanted to throw in too the fact where I may almost disagree with you, Gavin, in saying that Kaprizov is an outlier, because you see deals like Luke Hughes happen. And it's one of those situations, like a year ago, I would never have imagined a Luke Hughes getting signed to a deal like this. And so you start looking at a McDavid, at an Etchess, and you're like, this automatically, I think, brings their self-worth. We've talked a lot about self-worth, especially with Martin Necas. That brings their self-worth to an all-time high. And we, again, talk about how, you know, 11 may be a little too much for what we're looking for out of a Necas deal. And I think this automatically lets him know, like, hey, I can ask for shit like this because this is, you know, this is what the market's being set at. And as you kind of mentioned, when the deal was first being talked about and we were texting each other, this is the first domino. This is the deal that everybody's waiting for it to happen.
Firing in the group chat. We're like,
I will say, I see Jonas Siegenthaler with the Devils had a 3.4 contract with Hughes making $9 million and them being over the cap. I'm just saying, I'm seeing that. I'm liking what I'm seeing.
I'm sure that's everyone calling the GM of the Devils right now.
Literally everybody has to have a hand on this. Probably the Sharks are number one.
You get the phone call. He's like halfway chewing on a handful of chips. He's like, so Siegenthaler. And he's like, yeah, dude.
Yeah. Because the Sharks have $9 million in cap space. They could take somebody and then deal them at the deadline like they always do.
Love
Great strategy, by the way.
I Sharks do love doing, it.
Sharks doing good work.
Mike Greer and his beautiful polished bald head. They got things going on.
Not that this is this is totally off topic. I'm scrolling on Puckpedia and we'll wrap this up in a second, but I do want to say something. I think it's hilarious. Every single defenseman except for Dmitry Orlov on the Sharks is up for UFA after this season.
Maybe every
single one of them. I mean, they're all trade deadline acquisitions. Like I'm seeing Nick Leddy, John Klingberg, Mario Ferraro, Liljegren, Vincent Desharnais. I'm seeing like, oh man, that's a third round pick. That's a second round pick. That's a fourth rounder. That's a fifth and a third. You know, I just think that's funny.
Yeah. With that though, we're gonna wrap things up here, I believe, because it's we're kind of hitting that hour mark. Gavin, let the people know where they can find you.
You can go ahead and find me over at Avalanche Digest. Post some fun stuff, just getting the latest news. Do a lot of just like 8 to 12 minute videos, just breaking down certain topics. We'll have one up about this recent preseason game, and go find that fireworks.
Grant, where can the people find you?
You can find me at Grant_Foster_15. Big fan of Shorzy. You know.
Oh god, here we go.
Having a great day out here, bud. Give your balls a tug.
Oh god. You can find me over on X at Bailey Curtis, and that's Bailey with two Y's. Find me over there for a lot of my in-game coverage, things of that sort. Find my articles over at thehockeynews.com in the Colorado Avalanche page. Want to give a big shout out and thank you to the Hockey Podcast Network for letting us do what we do. If you are looking for a show on the other 31 NHL teams in the league, or maybe just some general content surrounding the NHL, be sure to go check out all of the other shows the Hockey Podcast Network has to offer at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com. Or if you're looking to interact with them over on socials, find them over on X at hockeypodnet. Thanks again to DraftKings for sponsoring. And that's going to do it for today's episode. We will see you guys next time here at the Avalanche Warning. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.